power of our diplomacy. Diplomacy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
I want to play this game so bad.
Deadline.
Hi, all.
Howdy doody.
It's episode 29 of Diplomacy Cast.
29 is a good number. Yeah. I like the anticipation of the 30.
Yeah, or well, if it's like your age, you're dragging that kind of. You're exactly. This is the last of our 20s, Nathan. Yep. We're going to have fun like you won't believe on this show. Diplomacy Cast is a podcast about the board game diplomacy. My name is
still
Eric
is
Mead.
Yeah. My name is still Nathan Barnes.
Yeah. Today on the show, well, we were going to do a bunch of stuff, and instead, we were going to get caught up in email. We're going to do that for sure. Still.
Absolutely.
We're going to catch you up on fantasy diplomacy standings now that May, and, and you know, we've been doing this for 5 months now, basically.
Right. We're also not going to have a jokey episode. Thanks to everybody that enjoyed our previous totally legitimate.
Totally real.
Totally real.
Super real.
Show.
We do not have a power play segment for you today because we have such an amazing interview. That we're just going to play that and you'll be happy.
Yeah, because we actually have a guest.
That's right. Yeah, we went back to the whole guest thing that we used to do.
We had some power plays in with the guest interview, we thought.
Our special guest is Christian Padone, man, legend, Philly person.
Public school teacher.
Saint among men.
Yeah.
If you have any questions, any feedback, anything, it's diplomacycast@gmail.com. Much better this time, everybody. Thank you for the emails, of which we're going to read a few.
Yes, and realize that our response time has to do with the show cycle and not because we're ignoring you.
Yes, and the show cycle in that we only read a couple of really unusual emails that we got on the last episode, episode 28.
Right. So you can also reach us on Facebook. And you can follow us on iTunes.
Yeah, do those things too.
Yep.
It's a hopping kind of internet scene that we have.
Yeah, it's good.
We will be back after this. So, okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked, actually.
Yeah.
I gotta say.
Just a little bit of this and that to chat about.
Like, yeah. It's nice to, you know, it's nice that we have things to chat about.
Yeah.
Things are going on, folks. That's what we're saying.
Fantasy diplomacy.
Yeah.
We gotta give you that update first.
Yeah. This will be the first update.
Yeah. There's actually only two tournaments that have gone into it so far. And those were WACCON, a whole truck of points, because remember it's based on Grand Prix standings, and Grand Prix standings are based on how big the tournament was, how many people you had to beat out, and a little bit still significant, a little tournament around Chicago called CODCON. Occurred. Results came back. Matt Shields gave me things. I am smarter than I was.
I have numbers, and I've used addition.
It's true. It's true. So we want to just be able to bring you guys these just throughout the year.
We're going
to
do this all year.
Remember, guest on the podcast to the winner.
Yep.
Don't forget.
That's what you win.
Please don't let it be someone Australian. That'd be so difficult.
We've done it before.
That's true. We did. Okay. Leading the tournament. And, hey, why not root for this guy? We haven't had Ike Porter on the show before.
Oh, okay.
The fantasy diplomacy thing.
Okay.
Ike Porter.
Ike Porter.
Who got a whole truck of points all from his first round draft pick, Chris Martin.
Cheating. Oh, yeah. What's he at?
Mick Cheaterson, 447 and change points. Chris had, I don't even know what he had. He had a second place in the tournament, best something or other, but whatever. Jan Kluwe and Brian Ecton have done nothing so far, and it doesn't even matter. It's just all Chris Martin all the time for him. So probably a pretty good draft pick. Second place, Nate Cockrell. Now, yes.
He's clocked in at 395 points. He's a little over 50 points.
Yeah.
Trailing.
First round draft pick was Eddie Bresson. Nothing. Not a point from Eddie. Second round draft pick was Goff. The Australian Mr. Goff, who scored him quite a few points at WAC. Don't know if he'll be at other events this year. Andrew Goff, that's his name. Sorry.
No, I was waiting for you.
Yeah. Third round draft pick also scored him nothing, and that was...
No, that's not quite true.
Well...
He scored something.
Well, no, but no fantasy diplomacy points, because remember, they only go to top seven, plus best countries, best stab. Yes. Oh, yeah, I think Goff had the best stab. That's part of how he got a bunch of those points at WAC. His third round draft pick was Larry Peary, who would have earned him an additional 243 points for shooting the moon at WAC, because having scored 0 points in the first round of the tournament, 0 points in the second round of the tournament, 0 points in the third round of the tournament, and then about 5 points of a possible, I don't even know how many you can score in a round of WAC.
Yeah.
He just squeaked in
with a couple
basically,
of
basically, he survived. He was in some kind of a draw with like two or three dots. If Larry Peary had simply not played the fourth round or else got eliminated like he did in every other round, Nate Cockrell easily leading the fantasy diplomacy right now.
Wow. So, I love that. That is really interesting.
Moving on down the list, Jack McKeon in third, who's, yeah, a few points here and there. Jim O'Kelly, Robert Primus,
McNamara.
Yeah. All of them managed to pick up,
Peter McNamara,
all of them managed to pick up some points here and there in the tournament. An accumulator, just grinding through, got some points at CogCon.
He's at 354
that he got
points.
At WAC, and then another 41 he got at CogCon.
He is like literally 0.02 of a point behind Cockrell.
Nate Cockrell, yeah. A rounding error, I would assume.
Right.
So that's how that happened. Next up, the crafty old veteran Jim O'Kelly, who drafted a bunch of Chicago people who went on to like do a bunch of stuff at like both tournaments, and they were at both tournaments.
Oh yeah, he's just gonna pump people into those Chicago tournaments.
Yep, Matt Sundstrom, John Gramila, both scored him a bunch of points at WAC and CogCon. So way to go, Jim! Nicely done. Chris Martin.
So he's at 375.
Yeah, 375 for Jim O'Kelly. Chris Martin, 354, because Chris Martin's good at everything. He has to be in the running a little bit. Got a bunch of points from his first rounder, Doug Moore. Dave Maletsky. Oh, all the way down in sixth place, Dave.
Yeah.
Sixth place.
Still in the running, though.
243 points. All of them from himself, his own first round draft pick, first shooting the moon at WAC.
I love it.
Mazel tov, Dave Maletsky.
I love it.
Mazel tov. Exactly tied with another 243 points, because you're shooting the moon is the same as coming in third. And Andrew McNamara's second rounder was Steve Cooley, who came in third.
Andrew.
I'm
McNamara.
Awesome today. Yes,
I think
yes.
It's Peter. Pretty sure.
Way
it's
to
Peter.
Go. You know the problem is I'm not drinking.
Well, we didn't. We're not doing. Yeah.
Peter McNamara. Sorry, Peter. And his first rounder was me. And, of course, I scored 0 points, and it was insane to draft me in the first round. His second rounder was Steve Cooley. That was smart.
Brilliant.
Steve Cooley, some points. Brian Sheldon, next down, in the mix. Oh, what did he get?
177
at WAC for either Bartolone. Oh, Bartolone might have gotten the best country. That might have been what that was for. Everybody else, that's Kevin O'Kelly, John Gramila, Roland Cook, Kira, Mike Hall, Jake Mannix, Peter Yergin, yet to score a point.
Yep.
You're all caught
up. Sorry, Mr. Yergin. You have Christian, you have Padone, you have me.
And Adam Siegel.
Yeah. So...
Yeah, that's not good.
Siegel and Padone actually have to show up at a tournament.
Yeah, that'd be good. Well, you know, it can all change at the next thing we're going to talk about coming up in, by the time you hear this, of course.
A couple weeks.
DixieCon.
Yeah. DixieCon. Over Memorial Day weekend.
Yes. And I'm sure you all know that it is WDC this year. It's on our website. It's on his website, DixieCon.com, and we told him we'd plug it, so we're plugging it.
We're plugging away at it. And you really should go.
Everybody's going. You could be a world champion.
Right. And I know it's only a couple weeks away, and you know it seems like it's gonna be a lot of money, but you know what? Do it anyway.
A world champion.
Just do it.
Your opportunity.
Stop debating it and just do it.
Nathan and I are both going.
Yeah, and
to this event, we will be.
Unless that's a minus for you, then we're not going.
In which case, totally not going.
Nope. But if that's a plus for you, thumbs up. We'll definitely be there.
Even if we are going, not playing well.
Yeah,
not playing well. So no worries.
Yeah,
there.
No, we're definitely doing softballs all weekend. Yeah. We're giving away dots. We're giving them away. We've gone insane.
I don't even have to advertise that. I just do that anyway. Now that's my new thing that I do.
So much real estate to give away.
Yeah. So that's happening too. I just wanted to mention. I'm all excited about
definitely
that.
Definitely go,
taking
guys.
A couple days off work, going into DC first, hang out with the DC peeps.
Nice.
I'm doing a road trip down there.
I'm definitely arriving a little bit early to hang out with folks. So lots of folks are going in early because it's in Raleigh.
Euros.
Well, it's in Chapel Hill, but
yep.
Did you just say Euros?
Euros will be there, not Euros, not like the delicious Greek treat. No, European people are traveling in early.
I see what you're saying.
Nathan will be hanging out with a contingent of those said people.
Yes, and we will all be having Euros.
And you'll all eat delicious Euros. No, you'll be eating egg and cheese biscuits.
I'm not eating one of those again. Oh,
they're so
God.
Good. They're like $2 and they're the size of your head.
And they're disgusting. Mm-hmm. What do they call that? Like halftime or quick time?
I forget what it's called.
Whatever,
it's
like
brilliant.
Partial. I don't know what it is.
But also some really good diplomacy will presumably be happening.
No, it's going to be fantastic, guys. There's lodging there if you need it. It's really cheap and reasonable.
Yep.
David Hood is just a workhorse and one of the most congenial and warm hosts you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, he's great. He really is great.
He's really dedicated to making sure you have a good time. And also, and this doesn't get said enough, they have this whole Iron Man tournament. There's a whole other set of games that are going on. If you just want to play a couple rounds of diplomacy, that's great. Plenty of other games to play.
Yeah.
Plenty of other fun stuff to go on. This is one of the most venerable tournaments in the United States. It's been going on since 1990. If you're not there, we're all sad.
Yeah.
You're going to make that time worse for all of us that are going, and there's nothing more disturbing or heartrending than seeing David Hood cry. Don't be that guy.
Laying it on thick.
Don't be that guy,
Nathan.
It's like a unicorn dying in front of you.
Oof!
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Sign up.
All right. Hot off the presses. Let's move on. Hot off the press.
Hot off the press.
Hot off the press.
Hot off the press.
Yeah, people don't use a press anymore.
Drop it like it's hot.
Oh, so if we just dropped it like it was hot?
We just dropped it like it was hot, you can do better than that.
Drop it like it's hot.
Off the press.
I'm not saying that.
All right, cool. Yes, it's true. We actually got emails.
And you know what? And we're just going to show you how much we love it.
It's, yes. Let's start with our pal, Siobhan.
Oh, Siobhan.
She took the trouble to write us an email.
Which is hard for her, because she just spends almost no time online.
Yeah, exactly. None whatsoever. Or texting, for that matter.
No.
No. I just wanted to read it. Hi, boys. Long-time listener. First-time writing. Nice. Love the show. Glad to see the latest reboot involved the much-needed change of actually doing the show on occasion. Yeah, we like that, too.
That's the kind of sass we expect.
We're enjoying that, for sure. I thought I'd write to shed some light on that ridiculous meta-fantasy game you mentioned briefly in episode 27. John Keith and I were standing around during the fantasy draft, and he suggested the ludicrous idea of fantasy diplomacy. I agreed to the ridiculous idea at once. How it worked is that we picked a fantasy diplomacy player, for instance. I picked Maletsky without knowing who their fantasy teams were, the idea being that we were picking a fantasy player based on our belief in their individual ability to draft well as opposed to who was actually on their team. I need to correct this. This is going on, and people are doing it. Wasn't just you and Jonathan Keith, as you may have thought, Siobhan. The large amounts of money were wagered on this at WackCon. I will not name the specifics, nor do I know the specifics, but yes, there are people who have drafted their meta fantasy diplomacy things. You are not a special little snowflake. And that's why I want to
Well, I mean,
your
in
email.
This matter.
You are.
In other matters.
She's a special little stuff. Like,
sure.
Mostly, I was happy that we got an email from Siobhan, and I wanted to read it.
Well, and you did a really good job.
Hey, thanks. Moving on. David Hood.
David Hood, just because we mentioned he's, you know.
Yes. You know. And he had actual strategy stuff that he wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Unlike everybody else who just was being twits, which is fine.
which we love.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the target audience, right?
We already did part of his job for him here. He wanted to make sure that we were plugging the heck out of DixieCon, and we just did.
Mission accomplished.
Can he convince us to do an episode anytime soon so he can promo Chapel Hill? No, you can't come on the episode, David.
No.
We got this. It's fine. We got this. Let's see. Yes, we are registered. Yes. Hopefully everybody is registered.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm in the registration website.
Yeah, I don't know if I am either.
I might have to do that.
This is our registration to you. We make a podcast. It is for you. Okay, so the strategy part
jerk,
of it.
What a jerk.
He wanted to respond to our EF England-France strategy segment that we had. Let me give you a quick thought about your EF alliance discussion. That whole conundrum that y'all discussed. Love it. What to do with your second French build in winter 1901 if you don't want to piss off England or Italy is exactly why France should never put itself in that situation. If you are that buddy-buddy with England, you should not be sending two units the wrong direction into Iberia when the war is going to be on the German border. You spend two units spending yourself supporting yourself into Belgium, which can be explained to Germany, I think, reasonably easily, and send the fleet into Iberia. Allows your pacing for builds to be better, gives your fleet something innocuous to do in 1902, going after Spain, and generally works better. Of course, as you know from the episode where I discussed France, I think it is also fun to send all three units against Belgium in 1901 anyway and save Iberia for 1902. Sure, that puts the French fleet in the channel, but this is not the kind of position that will make England suspect you are going to stab him. But it puts your whole military into the fight right away and gives you cool options for spring 1902. It's not for every game, obviously, but it should be in the mix of potential openings when appropriate.
I don't think I've ever actually seen that opening.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't happen much, put it that way. If they decide I want to be pro-English and anti-German...
Yeah.
Right? They'll still just sort of wander into the Mid-Atlantic. Because, look, the Mid-Atlantic, I'm going that way.
No, I'm not saying that it's not a justifiable idea.
I thought it was worth maybe breaking down for just a second or so.
Sure.
I'm just puzzling through it. So you're going, what, Burgundy, Picardy, and Belgium as your France opening. Puts three on Belgium. You're getting Belgium.
Oh, yeah, no, you're absolutely getting Belgium.
Burgundy, Picardy, and English Channel is what I meant to say.
Oh, what did you say?
Belgium. So, Burgundy, Picardy, the three things that border it that you can go to, assuming you make them all. One drawback comes to mind is you are tweaking both England and Germany a little bit. You're irritating them both.
And you're leaving yourself open to Italy. I mean, obviously, you need to...
That's true.
You need to deal with that situation before you do it. That's why he's saying not every board. Clearly not every board.
He mentions, yes, you'll be in the channel and that might annoy England. He doesn't mention, yes, you'll be in Burgundy and that might annoy Germany.
Yeah.
And if all of a sudden England and Germany, I mean, again, not for every situation, kind of situational, but if England and Germany each see you in a space that they would prefer that you weren't in, and the fact that you're building a maximum of one in that opening, no matter what else happens, they might just go, well, screw this guy, you know, if he's not getting Iberia. But
to his credit, it does limit you to one build, which makes you less threatening. You can easily justify to the English that you're going to use the fleet to move into Belgium.
Yep. And you could even do that, and you could even, as your build the second fleet, because that one's going to Iberia.
Yeah.
And then there's your two fleets in an easily justifiable way. So if you can pull it off diplomatically, there's a lot of power there.
I think it's different.
Yeah. Plus, the other thing is, there's always that thing like where France and Germany do get into a war, and you're like, well, I'm France and I'm attacking Germany. I should build an army here, but there's not really ever anywhere to put it.
Right.
After a certain point, it's like, I mean, I guess maybe if you could have an army in Belgium, an army in a Ruhr, and an army in Burgundy, that's your sort of World War One battle line kind of thing.
Yeah,
but, I mean, sometimes you just get that third army because you're attacking Germany.
Yeah.
Whether or not you also built a fleet.
Especially when you grind down and you can't go any further because they've locked up and the English and the Russians aren't giving you any hope to take the German from behind. It's sort of...
And then you've got your second fleet anyway, which is what you like. Or even if you build a third army, you don't need more than three, for sure.
Oh, no.
You know?
Well, and you should be building that fleet. You really should.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, good stuff from David Hood. The very extended discussion of this back all the way in the episode when we interviewed David Hood, because he's awesome, and he happened to be on our France episode.
I think it was episode 3.
Yeah, something like that, long time ago. But I remember him blowing minds at the time in the tactical discussion, and yes, because he's David Hood.
Another reason to go to WDC.
He'll hold court. He'll sit there and tell you about why to take Belgium.
Yeah.
DixieCon. Dixie, that thing. Okay, moving on.
Thanks, David. And so this next one is from... we have a little bit of feedback from our April Fool's episode, which we really enjoyed doing.
yes.
And, you know, I'll say that it was quite long, and that was by design.
Yes.
The theory that if you take something ridiculous and you move it past the point it's no longer funny and you break
then you just
through.
Keep going. Right. On the other side, there's
break
more funny.
Through.
It's exactly how we play diplomacy. And so it should come as no surprise
that we
enjoy a little bit of torture in all forms. And so, well, we did what we did.
Yeah.
We have to just keep raising the bar every year on April Fool's Day.
I think...
Yeah. Not that there will be one next year. We're not, we don't actually... We're not doing those.
Yeah, no. That's a thing of the past.
Mm-hmm.
I like this one. This one's from Zachary Jarvie. And my favorite part about this email, I don't really need to to go through it too much, but he just opens with, you know... Yeah, I actually typed RiskCast into Google and clicked search. I just love the thought of someone listening going, really?
You do RiskCast?
You do RiskCast?
I think Brian Sheldon actually fell for it for a moment, too. I texted him right after we put up the show for obvious reasons, and I was like, you'll want to listen to this one. And he was like, really? You guys do RiskCast? I was like, keep listening. Keep listening.
Oh, I'll have to hear later how he reacted
and
to
then,
SheldonCast.
Yeah, he enjoyed it. And then our friend Zachary Jarvie goes on and says that actually has some insight about the playing of Risk. I mean, not super seriously, literally. It's instead of inventing an alternate history extolling the imagined military glories of South America, would it really have been so difficult to research and discuss the controversial tactic of turtling? No, really, that's actually a thing. It's what those screwy back alley craps players do when they're losing ground and can't hold Asia. So this is
my... I love it.
So, and then he goes on trying to convince us, just imagine this, a genuinely realistic sounding Risk cast followed with your battleship dissertation and finishing off with the My Little Pony bit forming the third and final act. So, in other words, Zachary felt it was too long.
Yeah. I don't know.
You guys could send us an email a day saying that was too long, and I'd read everyone.
Yep, we'd read everyone.
Yes! Every single time.
Seriously, so. Pantscast. I mean, Pantscast. Yeah. But My Little Pony was one of the.
Oh, he also adds. By the way, Eric, how the hell do you get eliminated from a game of My Little Pony?
Only
sure.
Eric.
That was my favorite part. That was like we would talk about all the stuff about being best friends and stuff, and then I, every once in a while I'd just be like, yeah, we got eliminated.
We got totally eliminated. And I just enjoyed making horse trampling jokes the whole time.
Also good.
That was my favorite part of that.
But seriously, Eric, if you can't get it through your thick skull that friendship is magic, then I'm sorry to say that there is simply no help for you. Given your diplomacy background, you may find Care Bears to be a bit more your speed.
Well, we are West Coast.
Oh, snap.
We're West Coast.
Great listening as always. Regards, Zachary in Reno, Nevada.
Oh, thanks, Zachary.
Thanks
we really
the
appreciate the email.
Yeah, he wasn't the only one who said that he fell for it on some level. We got a couple more of those, too, and we enjoyed the heck out of them.
Are we wrapping up the...
There's the other stuff, but you'll hear from us.
We'll answer everybody's email.
Yeah.
That's hot off the presses.
That's how you do it. You write us emails. We like a few of them. We read them on the air. They generate stimulating discussions. We take your topic suggestions to heart. We move on to the next section.
Which in this case is...
An interview with Christian Padone.
I'm excited.
Yep. Enjoy it.
on the show. On the big show.
It's weird when we have guests.
I know. For the first time in a long time, joining us now is somebody, and that somebody is an excellent somebody, a Mr. Christian Padone, a longtime diplomacy tournament traveler, now host of the Philadelphia Massacre, a tournament in its second year that he's going to be telling us all about. We wanted to give him a chance to plug it on the show and talk lots of other interesting things that you guys are going to love.
Yep.
How you doing, Christian?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, no problem.
Should we start with that
tournament? Yeah, let's start with the tournament. What's the history behind it? Tell us all about how it started and where's it going. And
definitely.
What's happening?
Well, this tournament was originally started by Melissa Call, who is a Kiwi who's living in Australia right now, but she lived in Boston.
Friend of the show. She's been a guest.
Oh, yeah.
We know her.
That's right, yeah. So she's, she started this tournament up in a little game shop in Boston that I used to go to fairly frequently. I'm based in Philadelphia, and it's not that far. And the tournament was passed down to another guy who was running it for a while, and he was leaving Boston, and it was just kind of shriveling up. It looked like it was gonna just go belly up. So I talked to the guy who was running it. He was moving out to San Francisco, and I said, you know, we kind of have something going in Philly, and we'd love to make the jump to having a traveling tournament. And what we'd love to do is just move Boston Massacre down to Philly and just kind of use that name. And we kind of had a drink over it, a talk over it, and before you knew it, that was the plan. And we had our first tournament last year, 4th of July weekend in Philly, and it was good. It was a successful weekend.
Yep. Let's see. Anything kind of different from that in that tournament than other tournaments that people might have heard of before, other than the location? There hasn't been one in Philly that I've ever known of.
Yeah, I think it's new.
Yeah, Philly's a little bit underrated as far as diplomacy goes. We don't quite have like the gangbusters local hobby that like Chicago has, or a couple other places around. But one thing we have to our advantage is for a long time, I've been living in Philly about a decade, and I'm a public school teacher. And over that period of time, I've been running diplomacy clubs for young high schoolers in Philadelphia. So, like, now we held this tournament last year, and some travelers showed up, and they're playing with, two boards full of people who are very competent, very good diplomacy players who they have never, ever met in their life.
Love that.
So that was something that was really kind of cool. I remember, GMing this tournament and having some people who have been around the block more than a few times just kind of pull me over and be like, where did you find these guys?
Yes.
I was like, I made them. That's
they are mine.
Exactly. So, definitely a little different from that. And the other thing that's great about this tournament is there's this weird thing in Philadelphia. Obviously, if you know your history at all, Philadelphia 4th of July is a very big deal here.
Yep.
They treat 4th of July, like five other holidays stuck together. So when I was originally looking to do this tournament, I was a little worried about, finding a weekend for hotels or whatnot, but I went to these hotels and they're like, yeah, no one comes to Philly on 4th of July. It's all locals. So they were able to give us like great deals for travel. So our hotel, it's a DoubleTree Hotel on South Broad Street. It's right by City Hall. The other thing that's really awesome about it is in Philly on 4th of July night, which is the Friday of the tournament, there's a huge, enormous free concert by the Art Museum, which is walking distance, which is, the old Rocky Steps. Where, the Roots host it every year, and there's, like, fireworks and, like, thousands and thousands of people out. Our hotels look over the fireworks. You can see the fireworks going up. So it's really kind of not only a tournament, but, it's kind of a destination. If you ever have an excuse to come to Philly, this is it.
Wow.
Yeah, no kidding.
That sounds like an event.
Mm-hmm. So are there rounds on the actual 4th of July?
There are. I'm expecting a little bit of a lower turnout on Friday night this year, or maybe some unconventional openings.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Shame on you if you miss the fireworks because you're still playing. Yeah, like trying to squeeze two more dots out of the scoring system.
Exactly. A lot of 1905 draws on Friday night. But we also play Drop Dead, and we play very, very fast-paced in Philly. So it doesn't really lend itself to those like really like 12-hour game kind of situations. The style of play is pretty brisk. So you usually get a good chance to go out and see the town and see things.
Nice.
So, my, you know, listening to the underground, and my understanding is that you're bidding for something here.
Yes. There was some talk, and then there was some more talk. And what it looks like is Philly is going to throw their hat in the ring to host the 2015 DipCon. So,
nice.
We feel ready to have everybody come see us. We'd love that opportunity. So if you all listening can't make it this year, definitely next year.
That sounds like, are you going to do it the 4th of July again the next year?
That
if works out.
That looks right now like the weekend. For DipCon, I want to make sure, you know, we maximize, you know, everyone's opportunity to attend. So of course I'm going to look at a neighboring weekends, but right now, I mean, unfortunately, We're in a really kind of a strange state of flux with tournament diplomacy in the country because, you know, we've had some of our favorites, you guys out west.
Yeah.
You know, round of applause and pour some out for you guys for all the work done. And then, Husky out here, who, you know, is on hiatus right now. So we really kind of felt like, you know, East Coast represent, we need to step up. You know, Tempest is always great, but we needed a second.
That's right.
So we decided to try to pump this one up a little bit.
Very nice. It sounds great, man.
Yeah, and usually tournaments, you know, get a couple more years in than two, but it sounds like, you know, you're kind of a unique situation. You have this legacy from Boston Massacre, which, you know, there was like an 8-year legacy there that you've just inherited. And, you know, then you also have this interesting sort of influx of these, let's just call them clones that you could just inject into a round that, you know, give you a base that a lot of other people don't have.
An army of tiny Christian Padones.
Which is frightening when you say
one nodding their way across your board.
Which is a frightening thought.
Love it.
It's a frightening thought.
I do actually want to ask more about that.
Yeah, sure.
Because there's so many people out there that, like, you mentioned to them, oh, yeah, I've got this one hobby, it's diplomacy, and have you ever heard of that game? And if they say yes at all, there's at least, like, a 30 or 40% chance that the reason that the answer is yes is, oh, yeah, my AP history teacher made me play that in school. And I've never, well, I shouldn't say never. I haven't had a chance in a while to talk to anybody who's actually trying to, like, teach this to the school kids, and I love that you're doing that, and I want to know more about it, so...
Lay it on us.
Oh, sure. All right. So I'm a Philadelphia high school teacher, and I've been in the school district of Philly for about 8 years. And the first school I taught at for 5 years. And politics aside, this is one of the worst high schools in Philadelphia performance-wise. I mean, a really, really, really rough school. It's the furthest west in Philadelphia as you could get. It's actually all the way out, and it was a small high school with only about 600 kids. And I had started there, and I'll never forget this because, you know, I had been there a couple months, and I had this idea, you know, I want to, you know, I love diplomacy. It's a big part of my life. It's something I wanted to bring. So I found a couple kids. I found six kids who were willing to stay after school and give it a shot, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, some of them were ninth graders. Some of them, you know, were seniors. It just happened to be maybe a handful of kids where I was like, I could get them to trust me for an afternoon to come hang out. So they all did. And I showed them how to play, and I talked them through it. And we played 1901. We played 1902. And then I asked them in all sincerity. I had turned to them, and they're all sitting around the little table in my classroom. And I said, you know, all right, guys, like, you know, what do you think about this? Do you think maybe we could do this again, you know, next week? And this one girl, she just looks at me and she's kind of shaking her head. And I'm like, oh, all right, well, you know, it was worth a try. And she goes, nah, we can't wait till next week. We got to do this tomorrow. You know? And I was like, all right, well, maybe not tomorrow, maybe twice a week. And so at that school, we ran diplomacy club twice a week. We would play 2 years each session, write down the board position. We had a blog where the kids would go and get their maps. And, you know, wildly, wildly successful. I had other teachers coming up to me being like, you know, I walked up to these two kids because they were, you know, in my English class, like having an argument, and I was a little worried. And then I walk up to them and they're like, what are they, Gulf of Bothnia? What are you guys? And they're like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Espadon. Don't worry about it.
Exactly. I don't even understand these street kid slang these days. What the hell's a Bothnia? I don't have no idea.
Exactly, you know?
Well, how big did it get? I mean, are we talking like two boards?
The thing that that I've always kind of seen as this strange is no matter what I do, the club always tends to settle in that really awkward phase between one and two boards in schools.
Yeah.
Just tends to be that way. So we would usually have we would do a competitive league though. So we would number our games, and we would use the military alphabet. So like Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, and we would usually get up to game like, you know, Juliet or Igloo or Hotel by the end of the year. And there was, you know, competitive leagues and prizes and trophies and all this stuff. So usually, our students would like start, sit. They'd play two games in a row, which would usually take about a month, and then they'd take one off to GM or something like that.
And they just kept going. That's really awesome.
Yeah.
Oh shoot, I forgot my question.
That's okay.
I'm just. Oh well, did you manage to like work any like actual kind of like history teaching into the whole thing? Or
a little.
Yeah.
But honestly, when people say they learn this game from their history teachers,
yeah,
that's great and all. But the thing that I think that this game teaches young people. Is not really history. It's just how to deal with stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and that's definitely the better thing you can learn from the game, no question about it. I mean,
you know, something we had, you know, at that old school that we talked about a lot is redefine success. You know, like, yeah, you wanted to solo. That's not going to happen. Yeah, you wanted to top the board. That's not going to happen. How do you win now? What's a win for you now? You know, and kind of taking the temper out of the situation and getting angry and being like, I've got this kind of idea, you know, of how this is going to work for me so that I can be happy with it.
Do you feel like they'd walk away from it, like, sort of friends or enemies, depending on what happened in the game? Like, do you feel like it sort of it trickled over for those kids into sort of their... No.
Definitely not. I mean, you know, it was great. We had rivalries. I've had students who are kind of rivals with each other. I had two brothers who were probably the best diplomacy players that I ever kind of trained up. One of them is a junior at Temple now. He's a social work major. He's majoring in social work, and he was at the tournament last year. And the nicest guy you'll ever meet in your life, cold blooded killer on a day. I'm so proud of him. He's just straight evil.
I like that there's a metagame involved.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, there's definitely like a metagame involved with them because you're playing with the same, you know, we play, but we go to tournaments. You know, you might have like a guy who, like, that guy kind of rubs me the wrong way. You might not sit down and play with a board with them for 2 years. These guys are fighting the internal war, you know?
Yeah.
Every week they're back there with the same guys.
So you're still doing this now?
I am. I'm at a different school now. I'm at what's called a magnet school. So it's still a public school, it's still inner city kids, but there's a little bit of a criteria to let them in. It's like an academic and attendance and behavior criteria to let them in. So the bar is, you know, a little bit higher, but, and some of these players have been coming out to the tournaments as well and have been playing on the weekends with us. We play in a game shop in West Philly. But these guys, you know, from my old school, the thing that they kind of had that was a benefit is there's nothing else going on there.
Yeah.
Oh, right. There's a lot of competing things.
Yeah. Like, we would be in the building. They'd, like, throw us out at, like, 5:30, 6 o'clock. There was nothing else going on in there. We'd just sit and play diplomacy. Here, I got, you know, I have a hard time. I have to wait until chess season is over because I have some chess players. And
sure.
Half my diplomacy kids are on the running team and all this stuff. So it is a little bit of competing for time. But I
do
have a couple of promising young guys this year.
Nice. Nice. Is it mostly boys, or is it boys and girls, but mixed?
It is. You know, I've always had a mix of boys and girls, but for some reason, the ones that kind of cling to it and really kind of make it part of what they do, it tend to be the boys.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Same
that
with the grown-ups. Same with the grown-ups.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other question, I was going to say, have you ever gotten, like, feedback, like, positive or negative from the parents?
All positive.
All positive? Positive.
I mean, sometimes you need to, like, explain a little bit of, like, what this is, you know?
Right.
Because they're like, it's a game? It's like, yeah, it's a game. They think I'm, like, doing Model UN. I'm like, no.
Right.
No, it's not that, no.
Yeah. But these two brothers years ago, you know, who are now, you know, adults at this point, but I had gone to their house for, like, a graduation party or something that they had invited me to, and I had walked into their house, and the whole top of their television set, like, entertainment system, were all of these little dinky trophies that I had gotten over the course of 4 or 5 years of doing Diplomacy Club with them. Because we had best country trophies for the year and, like, places and stuff like that. And their whole top of their television set was covered with these things. And they're like, yeah, this is important to us, you know? This is something that we really take seriously, and this is something that we love. So it was cool to kind of see that. And, you know, the parents always were very, very supportive.
All right.
That's excellent.
So if you're a teacher or in any way affiliated with any school and you're listening to this and you don't go do that, then shame on you.
You got to go do it, man.
You got to do it.
I mean, there will be some kids, you know. I've had some students who, you know, have been like, thank you for inviting me.
Right.
This was wonderful. I never want to do this again.
And, yeah, that's pretty typical.
Once again, just like the grown-ups. Yeah, exactly. Thanks for inviting me to your house game. I got stabbed and I didn't like it. Goodbye.
Exactly. Not for everybody. And then you also get some students who, like, you know, this is an interesting thing because a lot of times we teach the game to adults who we have, you know, they have a level of competence that we assume is going to be there. And some students kind of start way below there. They can get there, but they start way below. So they'll do things sitting down at a diplomacy board that you don't even know how to understand how to explain why they don't make sense.
Right.
I have a student right now who last week issued a whole bunch of Russian orders that made no sense. And I asked him, you know, hey, man, what was that? He goes, well, look, my pieces are all in a neat little line now. I wanted to line them up.
Yeah.
I had to explain to him why that was maybe not the smartest.
I think you should write an article about that, actually. Yeah. How to Get Him in a Line by Christian Padone.
Uh-huh. And the last thing to come along for these young guys, and this is something that's pretty interesting, is builds. Builds is like a whole other thing, man, trying to teach students how to build. So we have a build process when I teach where they write their builds, and then before they show them to me, I tell them what I think they should be, and then they show them. And we kind of debate between us. Because that's the area that actually is, I think, the last piece to come along. What do I need to build?
So they let you, like, they let you coach in kind of good spirits. No, nobody is ever like, hey, you just did what the teacher told you to do, kind of a thing.
Oh, definitely.
They usually have the good attitude.
In fact, the problem that happens is if I ever have to step onto a board because someone is either absent or there's a problem, is the general problem I have is I have to yell at them to attack me.
Right.
Yeah, like, don't run away. You can throw units at me. It's okay. I can handle it, you know? They're like, okay, and they run away, you know? Like, no, it's all right.
Oh, man, that's exciting. Well, now we have at least, we found our source of new players, so that's good. We might want to expand this program a little bit.
Everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
The last thing I wanted to talk to you about, you had that, you had mentioned to us, you had that article that you were...
Oh, yeah, that article. Yeah, I was kicking around this idea, you know, in one of those post-round discussions that usually takes place over drinks at a tournament. We were talking about just kind of like pet peeve type of behaviors that you know, diplomacy players have without really naming names. I'm not talking about individual people, but I'm talking more like those guys, you know?
I love this subject so much.
I know you do. Those guys. And before we even go into this, like, I really have to say, in a lot of ways, I am these guys. I'm sure there's things I do that are really annoying and really, really terrible.
Sure.
But...
No, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you are these
guys. I am these guys.
Yeah.
I've been these guys. But, you know, it kind of, the conversation between a couple people turned from, like, if you were to sit down at the diplomacy board with six other human beings, without naming names, like, what six guys do you not want to see? Like, who are those people that just make your afternoon a living hell? And so I had thought of this, you know, and I had talked about this, and I came up with my personal list. Particular behaviors. I was going to write them into an article, but that never really happened. I didn't want to, you know, inadvertently offend anyone when I couldn't explain. So I figure, why not do it in a podcast?
Exactly. So this is appropriate.
We can offend everyone on purpose and me and Nathan take the fall for it.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely end up taking the fall for
probably.
It.
Probably. Well, thanks for taking the fall for it. So yeah, this is a list of, I would say six people on the diplomacy board who just kind of drive me up the wall. All right. So my number one, and this is not in order of significance at all, but, obscure lingo guy is what I call him. This is a guy who like has recently read every ancient dust-covered article on the diplomatic pouch and wants you to know it. So when he's discussing his orders with you, he will reference these articles as if they're some kind of gospel and you should know exactly what he's talking about. I'm not talking about like standard, like Lepanto or, you know, I'm just going to open north with Russia. Like that's fine. He wants to use these obscure terms like hedgehog.
Yeah.
And that's
The northern hedgehog.
The northern.
The northern hedgehog. Yeah.
The reverse alpine chicken.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, you got to reverse it. Exactly. And they'll just come up to you and be like, how do you feel about the blue water Lepanto if I modify it? Are you good with that? I'm like, dude, just tell me where you want me to move my pieces. And I will tell you yes or no. And this is, it's hard because, like, you know, you could be an experienced diplomacy player and not know all of this crap that he's talking about. So,
or just think it's slightly different than they think.
Oh yes, that's also
like you have to verify because I said I was going to do that. Okay, but that's what this is. Oh no, I was talking about this variant. No, you got
to
verify.
Exactly. That. It's like I'm going to Churchill if you are. You know, it's like come on, man. Like just we have enough time. We have 12 minutes. Say the actual words that you're trying to say. You know. So for me,
with you on that,
this is an issue. That kind of irks me, that I need to speak this secret language. Have you guys ever encountered anybody like this?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I really think it's used in situations to get across exactly the thing I was just talking about, where they can easily go back and say, oh, this is what I meant, this is what I was saying, I'm sorry you misinterpreted it, so that when they've done something shitty to you, you have no recourse because they just throw up their hands and say, oh, I didn't mean to. That's normally what I deal with.
Also think that there's people who are probing you when they do that. Huh? They want to see if you know what the Kronkerstechen freak out is or whatever. Yeah. They want to see, you know, now I know who can speak my lingo to me. That's the guy I'm going to work with.
Exactly. As if that's some kind of indicator of competency when it's really not.
Right. And it rubs people the wrong way, especially the exact people who don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. You know, if you walk up to like a new player and you're like, we're doing the reverse alpine chicken. Yeah. They're like, F you, buddy. I'm not doing, you know, like, cause I don't know what that is. And you're trying to show me that I don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll call him like Brainy Smurf.
I like that.
That'll be my nickname for,
Uh-huh.
It reminds me of that, being on board one time with Jerry Fest, and he had done a Key Lepanto and spent the rest of the game convincing the rest of the board that he had no idea what a Key Lepanto was, and he had done it completely accidentally.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone's like, it's Aquila Ponto. And everyone starts yelling, it's Aquila Ponto. And he just blankly says, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't know what that means.
Yeah. And it was a misorder, my mistake.
Yeah. I didn't know.
I can't believe I walked out of Serbian.
What was I doing?
Nice. So, yeah. All right. Number two
is something I wrote up as the historian, and this is not in a historical sense. This is the guy who is going to bring up something you did in a house game 7 years ago that you definitely do not remember. Okay, you know what I'm talking about?
That's like every game for me. I never remember my games.
Yeah. Not even remembering the game. They'll be like, "You said you were going to support me to Sweden with Gulf of Bothnia, but you did it with Baltic because you knew that one would be tapped in 2003." I'll be like, "What?"
How do you know this stuff?
He's like, you got to dig yourself out of a hole, buddy. You're starting at a deficit. Really? Like 2003?
Yeah.
Like, you got to cut me some slack. I don't remember what I ate for dinner yesterday. And you're trying to, you know, and there's a time and a place. You know, if you have players that you have kind of a history with, and, you know, we all have people who likes, dislikes, trends, patterns, or whatever. But when you're bringing up ancient history, it's a problem.
Absolutely. I'm just going to throw him under the bus because he doesn't play diplomacy anymore. But you know who's the best at that was Andy Marshall. That guy, whatever the situation was, he could do anything he wanted and then justify it to you afterwards based on the fact that, oh, no, because I knew you wouldn't do that because of this game that we played way back when. He'd use it as an excuse to just treat you as crappy as he wanted to treat you in any particular game. If he wanted you to do what he wanted you to do, he'd just be like, don't you remember how well we worked together in 2007 on that board? You were Austria, I was Italy. You don't remember that? It was so great. Why can't you just trust me to do this? You know, it was just,
And that just never works on me because I'm always staring blankly at the person like, I'm sure, I believe you that we played a game 3 years ago and that I was a country and you were a country.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, bud. I literally don't remember. It's gone from my mind. Literally, when the weekend is over, that's maybe has a shelf life of maybe a week, and then I have other.
We have to rush home after tournaments and make a show so that we
because I won't remember it otherwise.
Okay, so what were your boards? Quick!
Oh God, I don't remember.
Yeah,
something. Yeah, that guy sucks.
Yeah. All right. So I got a third one here. This one is irritating, but mostly in the for the reason because I'm easily defeated by this person. This is someone I call the clam. This is the guy who calls you out in the hallway to have a conversation with you and basically says nothing the entire time. So it's one of those things where they're like, let's talk, and you go out there, and nothing's happening. So you give like a small piece of information, whether it's real or not or whatever, to kind of prime the pump, get the conversation started, but that doesn't go anywhere, so you give a bigger one, and then the conversation's over. And you're like,
starts to leave, and you go, well, what do you think? And he just goes, yeah, okay, we'll be back.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you have no idea. Like, have I convinced you? Did you?
And this is what I will call out, because these people tend to just kick my ass in a tournament. This is Doug Moore.
Yes, yes, he is.
Doug Moore will have a conversation with him. You're like, I gave him nothing. He gave me nothing, and I gave him everything for some reason.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Or except like a vague reassuring thing at the end, like, oh yeah, no, that's fine.
It's like I would have been not talking to him at all. Like, he's just totally just name and serial number. He's not going to give you anything. It's just better to ignore. And to a lesser degree, Graham Woodring's like this too. He's like you squat. He's just going to look at you and smirk. They're like, Graham, say something to me, man. You got to say something.
Ooh, okay.
I'd never really thought of that one before, and you're totally right. Yeah. It really is a strategy in that game, and they just sort of information suck you in by staring, like the Calvin Coolidge there.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm a blabber. I just talk, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, me too.
You know? Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you just keep going and going, and you're like, does that sound good? How about this? Does that sound good? Do you think about this? Does that sound good? And they're just like, oh, I know what you like, you know?
File this away, listeners. File this away.
Yep. Exactly.
That's... You could be the clam, or you could just be aware of the clam, or the Calvin Coolidge.
So far, I'm sitting at a board with a guy who's trying to get me to reverse Houseboat Hedgehog.
Yeah.
The guy who's mad at me for something I did in the house game in 2003, and the clam.
Yep.
All
right? Yep.
Now, the next guy is... This guy is actually kind of fun, and he's somebody I like to call the unraveling sweater. And there are different variants on the unraveling sweater. But the most common one is the drinking guy.
Oh,
okay?
Yeah.
Who sits down on the board in 1901 and seems like a nice enough guy, and then the bottles come out in 1902, you're working with them, and then 1903, here come the miss orders. Mm-hmm. And in 1904, you're like, why did I throw my lot in with this guy? And
or if not the misorders, the sudden paranoia. Like, they'll just be like, ah, Christian's coming after me. I just know Christian's coming
exactly.
after me.
Exactly. But there are many different unraveling sweaters. There's the, the drunk. There's the, I worked this morning Friday guy.
Mm-hmm.
Who's like, just like, I just think we should draw. I just think we should draw. I think we should draw.
I think we should wrap it up.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Be like, why are we drawing the game? Because I went to work at 5 o'clock this morning. Like, I traveled. It's like, yep, I know, but we could get across the stalemate line. I just think we should draw. You know?
Suck it up.
Yeah, exactly. And my personal favorite, which has happened to me, once or twice, is, competent ally whose girlfriend showed up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, the sweater starts to unravel. It's like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know, man. I think this is as far as we're going to go. Like, come on!
No, I got to go.
I
got to go.
You should have told me your girlfriend was coming. I played in a tournament. I don't remember the guy, but I remember playing Italy in a tournament that I had traveled to, and the Austrian player's girlfriend showed up in 1901, and he opened to Adriatic and Tyrolia. I was like, dude, I get it. You wanted to go to the movies with your girlfriend. That's cool. But, we could have done this the easy way and just let me have all your stuff.
I would assume that happened somewhere on the West Coast.
Yeah.
That sounds like the kind of thing we do to travelers up here.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Welcome to the West.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
so a sweater is unraveling.
The unraveling sweater guy is the worst. I've encountered this several times, but I've been pretty good at spotting these guys. The guys who come to the bottle, to the table with the bottle, and they're ready to go. Like this guy. Yeah. So
some of us are okay at doing that, by the way.
Oh yeah. Oh no. Yeah. There are quite a few diplomacy players who get better as they drink.
Yeah, I feel like I'm a special variant of that, where I will refuse to drink, refuse to drink until the wheels come off for some other reason in my game, and that's when I start drinking, and then it gets fun again. Like, I'll try real hard and not be that guy, and then when I realize I'm boned, that's when I start drinking, and then the game gets fun, at least for me, and maybe somebody else, I don't know.
Well, Eric, since we're talking about this, I don't have you on the list here, but you, not by yourself, are one of these guys. When you sit down of the board and you have the two smoking guys.
Oh, geez. Oh, smoking guys. Yeah.
Smoking guys. You guys are the worst.
Yeah.
they're terrible.
Because we're automatically allies.
You're automatically allies. And it'd be like 1903, you don't get to talk to your ally because he's out talking to Germany for the full 12 minutes.
Yeah, and sometimes we just need to stop the game anyway.
Never there to get the orders done, or you want to do a draw and you can't find them.
But since you're on your own, you're fine. You're not on the list. But when there's two of you guys, smoking guys, you're the worst.
I completely agree. Right. Three, it's just like you just call a three-way draw with them or a four-way draw without them. It doesn't matter. Like one way or the other, you just as long as that game gets over with, I'm with you.
Exactly. All right. So number five is a very, very, very specific thing. Extraordinarily specific. So I have to read it because it's very specific. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
This is the guy who makes the tired old "I survived long enough to read" joke when you have to force a chuckle because you need him to tap Budapest in the fall.
Perfect.
Okay.
Oh, I'm so familiar with that.
Right? Like I don't know. I know you don't have a lot going on when you have one center, but that joke just kind of like nails on a blackboard for me.
Yeah, because it's so predictable and just obligatory. Like, oh, wait, so you are the first person to say this today.
Mm-hmm. What about the person board? Who proposes a seven-way draw before spring of 01?
Also good, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Except you never need that guy to do anything.
That's true.
You never have to humor that guy. That's true. You can tell that guy to just, I don't know, put his head in the sand or something PC.
Yeah.
Yeah,
this is a fancy
you can smirk that one off, but the guy you need, you're like, oh, haha, good one.
Hang in there, it's gonna get better, I promise.
We're gonna work it out. It's gonna be good. You just tap that, and everything's gonna win. Okay.
And if it's like twice in one game, hey, I survived to read again.
Great. Also now that I'm doing this podcast, preparing to hear that joke every time.
That is the curse of the podcast
ever in my life. Okay. And then
you just cursed yourself.
Oh, it's fine. This is, if it gets a couple more people to come to Philly, I'm all good.
Perfect.
Come to Philly. Make come survive joke. To read in Philadelphia. It's a beautiful place to have one center.
Better than most.
Better than most. Yeah. We'll get you out in time for the fireworks. all right, and the last one on here, and this one is probably the one that's most prevalent out there, and this is irrational objective guy. This is the guy who, like, you're like, all right, so we're playing on this board, you know, a lot of blood has been spilled, people have lied to everybody or whatever, and this is the guy who's like, I don't care if there's a solo, I don't care if there's a draw. All I know is I am holding Bulgaria.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, so long as I hold Bulgaria, this game is a success.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
And you're like, but don't you see we need to stop the solo? Be like, there is no solo. There's only holding Bulgaria.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I hold Bulgaria, then I win.
They make their own fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
They make their own fun. And these are...
Which, to a certain level, it's okay, but then it does literally get to a point where you're... It's irrational.
It's irrational. Now there's perfectly fine variants of this. Like, I told you if you stabbed me, I am going to throw the solo. You stab me, I'm going to try and throw the solo. Yeah. Fine. Okay? If you're like, hey, I don't really care too much what happens so long as I'm bigger than this other guy I've been having a problem with. I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with irrational objectives.
Yeah.
Okay? Where they're like, so long as no one goes to Livonia, I won't throw the game.
Yeah.
Things that just don't make any sense. That are just absolute nonsense.
And they think it's funny, or they think it's charming, or they, mm-hmm. yeah.
And that's their own little moral victory. Be like, we're all going to get 0 points for the tournament. We all wasted our time. This guy's going to solo. Be like, not like he's purposely trying to throw the solo. It's just he's made his own rules for the game.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Although I will cite one small counterexample of that, a board I played at a tournament where everybody hated each other so much by the end of it that all we cared about was getting the Austrian-Belgian, but everybody on the board was into it.
Oh, well then.
Like, everybody except, like, one guy.
Like, I'm sure.
Yeah, he ended at, like, 10 or 11, and everyone was happy. Like, we were just like, that was the stupidest game ever. I don't care about our scores. Let's go home.
No, that sounds like, I've been on boards like that as well. That sounds like fun.
It was consensual, though. You know, everyone was in on it.
It sounds like it was cathartic.
It was pretty good, yeah.
It sounds like. Well, it sounds like, Christian, you put together a really unpleasant board.
That is, for me, probably the worst, yes.
Do you have any to add, Nathan?
Oh, do I have any any archetypes that I can't stand? I mean, we've talked about this on other episodes.
Yeah.
I have my own pet peeves. But they're really personal to me. Like, there's definitely, you know, I've played this game long enough now in the tournament scene that there's, like, this contingent of guys that have decided they've figured me out. And they'll come up to me and they'll be like, hey, Nathan, you like fun things, right? Let's do something fun. You always like fun, wacky things. Which is to some extent true, but I don't like them for the sake of them being fun and wacky. I like them because fun and wacky sometimes is effective in certain situations, and I don't like trying to mess with people. That's all right.
They treat you like the cocaine era diplomacy Robin Williams.
Right, exactly. It's like, oh, it's going to be hilarious when Nathan goes ahead and just
defenders and run around.
If I give him an idea, he'll, like, just tweak out on it and just, you know, he'll drive all of his units in a certain way. And, it, you know,
I understand why that happens, because sometimes I will, not because it was suggested to me, but because it will make sense in a certain context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like that is sort of like, okay, yeah, I get it. I'm fun. Great. We can maybe stop treating me like I'm a wind-up toy. My reaction to that is usually, you know, just a smile and not do much more about it. But it is sort of a pet peeve at this point.
I have, I'm going to call him a super intense stalemate line guy.
Okay.
Talks about it in 1901.
Talks about it in 1901 and just discusses how we've got to get to the stalemate line and we don't have time to attack anybody because that's not the point here. Where if we can't put three supports on Munich by the next season, we've already lost this game, so what's even the point?
What's even the point? Exactly.
Yeah, there's my one right there.
I don't like guy, that guy.
Like, static alliance, super intense stalemate guy who's just, like, trying to solve how to make the four-way before the game even gets played. Like, there's my addition to the list.
And, the only other guy that I could think of, my last one, is I'm just going to call him Mopey.
Oh, Mopey's good, too. Yeah.
I don't like... I mean, it's... You know, that... You don't see it much in the tournament scene. You definitely see it in house games a lot, but you do see it occasionally in the tournament scene, like where someone's just getting hammered. Like, you know, sometimes you just get hammered. Sometimes it's your fault. Sometimes you didn't do anything, and you just woke up in the wrong country.
Yep.
But there are two ways to handle it. You can play the game and work and try and whatever, or you can mope at the board and Eeyore at everybody who comes up to the board and just make it sort of like uncomfortable. Like they camp out at the board and they just stare at it forlornly as if it's making them sad.
Yep.
Like, oh, this. Bye. And then, somebody comes by, you're like, hey, what's going on? And they don't want it. Well, I mean, no one wants to talk.
My orders are in already.
Exactly. My orders are in. I guess, do you want to talk? Oh, okay, I guess. Yeah. I don't see
what
the point.
What can I do for you?
Like that guy.
Oh God!
Stop
what
it.
Can I do for you, guy?
Yeah, that's almost another thing. Just stop. Just
like,
play.
One dot guy who never really has a proposal or any kind of a vision. He just wants to talk to you and take a couple minutes to just be like, "What do you want me to do?"
Right. Anyway. There's a certain variant in which where you've just really pummeled someone and you've done it by just repeatedly lying to them. I think it's legitimate for them to be a little sassy.
The guy that just like has no plan isn't really mad at anyone, anything. He's just sort of wandering around, being like, "What should I do?" Sometimes that guy's useful though, because sometimes he'll just take the last suggestion before the deadline. He goes, wanders off, plays cards or something. You can be like, "Oh, dude, can you tap Bulgaria?" Yeah,
sure. I guess
he just does that.
Exactly.
Deadline, and then you're like, "I win."
The honorable mention guy I have down here who didn't make the list is something I like to call the newbie whisperer.
Oh yeah.
Which I will go ahead and call him out. How you doing, Chris Martin? How you doing? Or you sit down on a board with, I don't know what he's got, some kind of magic spell he does, but he will make some new players do some ridiculous things to you.
Yep.
To you.
Yeah, some people are really good at that. They're really good at, like, they just have that wing to bring somebody into the fold, and it's kind of beautiful to watch, and it just bones you.
A guy did something, I can't remember the exact nature of it, but it was something insane, like, I think I was in France, and the British player convoyed Chris's Russian army to Picardy or something insane.
Nice.
And I just turned to him, and I'm like, that was so dumb. He's like, that's exactly what Chris said you were going to say. And I was just like, well, this is just done. We're just done here.
Brilliant.
And they're like, high-fived. I'm like,
And you're celebrating your doom. That's excellent.
I was just like, well, there's nothing we could do there.
I loved it.
So just for the record, I am all of these guys. I've done all of these things.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm 3 or 4. Please,
oh, definitely.
About it. Yeah.
I've had my sweater unravel once or twice.
Oh, definitely. You know, I've moped, I think, at some point.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
I've never made this survive long enough to re-joke, though. I will say that.
Oh, that's actually... There should be, a Lifetime Achievement Award for that. I feel like you deserve something special. Fantasy. I don't mean to cut this one short. I suddenly remembered there was one more thing we wanted to talk about.
Yeah, well, we can move on.
Definitely.
We'll chat about the fantasy diplomacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is one of those parallel thinking things. So I was trying to think of some interesting ways, you know, to kind of, you know, do some new things at a diplomacy tournament. And I was like, oh, maybe we do a fantasy thing. And then I had heard that at WAC you guys had tried this. And I was like, oh, yeah. Crap. Cool. I really want to talk to them and be like, am I trying to rip you guys off? I just thought it was a cool idea as well.
No. We've been kicking it around for a while, and other people have had the idea. But, yeah, we both finally decided to do it in the same year. So, unrelated Philadelphia Massacre Fantasy Diplomacy, which is unrelated to both our podcast Fantasy Diplomacy and also the meta Fantasy Diplomacy that some people invented about our Fantasy Diplomacy while they were at WAC. So this would be league number three, if you will, that is going to be going on in relation.
Now, this is just a single tournament thing. I wanted to get, like, I have some great, awesome diplomacy players around the country who have sent me these big, long emails being like, hey, Padone, listen, man, 4th of July weekend's really bad for me. It's always going to be bad for me. My family does a thing. I'd love to support. Just wanted you to know. You know, we're trying. I would love to do it. I just can't do it and the whole thing. And I wanted to figure out a way to get these diplomacy players involved because we all have that thing. Like, I have never been to Carnage. I would love to go to Carnage. But as a teacher, getting up to the middle of nowhere, Vermont, on a Friday is just impossible for me. You know, it's just a really, really tough assignment for me at a really tough time. So I've never been, and I would love to go. So, like, I completely understand this. So I was like, how can we get these people who are awesome and who we want to be in the tournament to be part of it and also to support the tournament? So what I was trying to do is have basically a just inside of Massacre just for that weekend fantasy tournament. And what you would do is no one in the tournament is actually participating in it, to their knowledge. It would be basically maybe 8 to 10, depending on how many people we can get to do it, owners. And these guys on Friday would basically do a snake draft during the round, either via text or Skype or email or Google Docs or whatever, where you would select people who are participating in the tournament.
That's exactly what we did, basically. Yep.
And throughout the weekend, these are going to be scored, but none of the people are actually in the city at the time who are competing.
Right.
And there would be an entry fee, a small entry fee, and it would be like a 50-50 situation instead of a raffle at the tournament. So there would be a cash payout that people could get for having the best team. But the fun in it really comes in the taunting text messages.
You're right.
Exactly.
Where, you know, someone like, for example, Jim O'Kelly would be sitting in Chicago frantically texting Dave Maletsky, be like, please, 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 I need you to stab this guy. You know? Or something along the lines of that. And also...
Please...
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, please enjoy them figuring out ways to break your system that you've never even thought of before.
That's going to be awesome.
We've been enjoying that so much.
Yeah. So, you know, I thought this would be a fun thing. And also, I mean, I think we've all been there where there's been a tournament that's been going on and we've been sitting there all weekend going, oh, I wish I could be there, you know?
Yeah.
And this is really kind of a cool way to be there. You know, we like, I might not be able to be there, but you know what? Here's a small little something for the hobby, and let me pick 6 diplomacy players to root on for the weekend and get text updates.
Yep.
You know?
I love this idea.
Which is a lot of fun, really. And I don't think it really messes with, like, the meta scoring of the tournament because no one there is necessarily involved in it at all.
Actually, maybe me and Nathan should split one and just call it, like, the Diplomacy Cast Team.
Yeah, you are
booked. It would be so embarrassing if it won.
You are booked.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I'm booking you.
That is great. No, yeah.
Everybody would be humiliated forever if we happened to win it. That would be awesome.
I mean, you guys can fly to Philly, you know, and then you're disqualified. That's much
better. Or we could fly to Philly.
But failing that, of course, you're more than welcome to have a team. I think you guys should definitely take one. And then one other thing we're doing at Massacre this year that we're going to kind of try out is I know a lot of tournaments do the team round situation.
Yeah.
Which never really, for me, did anything for me. Because really what it does is it encourages you to be on a team you don't want to play with people you don't want to play with.
True.
Exactly.
Right? Because you're like, I don't like you, you don't like me, but we're both pretty good, so let's just agree not to play together in the second round.
True.
Right? Which is, it's a cool idea. So what I wanted to do is kind of run a separate kind of, in addition to the regular tournament, we're going to run like a World Cup style scoring. Okay. Where basically in each round you're going to be put into groups. And so you'll be put into a group with people on all other boards. So, like, for example, in the first round, it'll be like your group round. So you'll be on, you know, board one, and you'll be in the group with someone on board two, someone on board three, and someone on board four. And the top scoring person moves on to the next round. Everybody continues to play in the tournament, but those are the only people who are still alive in the World Cup style.
Oh.
And then we have a second round, and then in the final round, there'll be one person who's still alive on each board. And so at the end of the tournament, you'll have a tournament winner, but you'll also have kind of a World Cup champion. You'll have someone who was the best against these people in each round, which is just a nice little fun extra trophy to hand out.
I like that a lot, actually.
I'll be curious to see how that works.
And what's cool about it is it kind of doesn't do anything to the dynamics of the tournament at all.
It doesn't really screw the tournament at all.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
you know,
that's good.
And it's pretty easy in the first round, because in the first round, I'm just simply going to do it by countries. So in the first round, all Austrias will be in the same...
Oh, sure.
Yeah, all Englands, et cetera, and so forth. And then after that, we'll be like, all right, well, you know, we had four rounds or five boards or whatever, you know, so, you know, we're down to seven now. We'll work it out. I'll figure out exactly how it's going to go. I haven't crunched all the numbers on it yet, but I thought it would be a cool kind of additional tournament to kind of run.
It's good. It's very, very good.
Sounds like it'll be fun.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've run long, which is fine. Always run long on this show.
We always
run
long.
But I just want to recap here for a second. Christian has come on our show. He's started a new tournament.
Yep.
And wants to tell us about it instead of just like sending us vague passive aggressive emails about it. He actually wanted to come on the show. Oh, well, that's fine too. But he's actually come on the show to plug his tournament. He teaches inner city children how to play this game that we all love.
Yep.
And he brought his whole own diplomacy conversation topic having to do with. So basically, all other guests that have ever been on the show, you are not working hard. Like, we have no real interest in anyone coming less prepared.
Yeah, this is
Christian.
The new bar.
Boom.
This is where the new bar is going to be.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I simultaneously pissed off half the people I played diplomacy with talking about annoying habits, and then the other half by discouraging them from coming on without...
Collateral damage, my friend. You can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs. You made the show better. The important part is you made the show better. You just got to...
Yeah, it's good. Well, yeah, thanks for coming on and spending a little over an hour with us.
Oh, definitely. Just last things. PhiladelphiaMassacre.com is our website. You should definitely go there. Check it out. Definitely email me if you have my emails on there. Any questions, any kind of... things you want to kind of flesh out before you get down here. I know last year a lot of people brought families. There's a lot of stuff to do. You go see the Liberty Bell. You eat a cheesesteak. It's a good time. Really underrated city. Go check out the website. Really consider it, because we're really kind of at a crossroads with these tournaments in North America. We really need to start pumping them up a little bit, you know. So it would be really awesome if you guys could come on out. Anybody out there for a holiday weekend, just come on down to Philadelphia.
And can the folks meet Christian Padone in person at this coming World Diplomacy at Dixie?
Heartbroken. Yes. I have a very unfortunate wedding to attend. And not that the wedding is unfortunate, just the timing. And so... if people don't know this, some diplomacy players do, some don't. In the Padone house, we are now with child. We have a kid. Yes, Vincent Padone, who debuting at a tournament sometime in the next 18 years. I had booked my reservation to North Carolina with the wife long in advance. I said, I'm going. And then this wedding came up. So unfortunately, there's nothing I could do about it. I am heartsick over it. I wish there was a fantasy tournament down there, because I would certainly be participating in it. I will have some minions down there, some people who have been to Philadelphia before. Ask around. I'm hopefully going to have some flyers down there and things like that. Are you guys going?
We'll be there.
Sorely jealous. I am sick with jealousy.
Well, we still have, what, like 3 weeks to break them up, I suppose.
That's true. I mean,
one of them could leave the other at the altar. Just put like 10 diplomacy players on it. We'll get it done.
They're nice people. I couldn't.
Oh,
damn.
Fair enough.
Yeah, really, really kind of a tough situation. So I'm really, I really need to see everybody in Philly to make me feel better.
Definitely.
You know?
All right.
Thanks for doing this, man.
We'll talk to you soon.
Hold on. Before you guys go, I just want to say thank you guys so much for doing this for everybody. Okay. This is an awesome, awesome thing you guys do. I know it takes a lot of time. It's very thankless. You are awesome.
Oh, we get super paid for this.
Never mind. Everything.
Rolling in dough.
I didn't realize. All right.
Thank you.
No, we appreciate it. I mean, you guys are phenomenal. Please keep doing this. I know everybody gets super psyched when a new Diplomacy cast comes out.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, we get psyched up. I get psyched.
I don't have Facebook. What do you want to do?
I get like a little bloop bloop on my phone for my podcast.
Nice.
It's like new Diplomacy cast. I'm like, oh, crap. And that's it.
Nice.
I got to like drive around circles around my block listening to it. All right?
Yeah, thanks
appreciate
so much.
It. Thanks
appreciate
for stopping.
All right, guys.
We will talk to you
North
soon.
North Carolina. Don't eat too much barbecue, all right?
All right. Sounds good.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. You've been listening to DiplomacyCast.com. My name's Eric Mead.
My name's Nathan Bonds.
Goodbye.
Adios. Vaya con Dios. Vaya con Dios.